Barbie's apartment, New York City, evening. Standing by the dressing table near her bed, wearing a bathrobe over her t-shirt, Barbie holds the porpentine in her cupped hands, a lump of pink rose quartz with spidery threads of spun silver surrounding it. She stares out at nothing. She is miles away.
Oh!
Hastily, she puts the porpentine into a small drawer at the side of the dressing table.
Hold on!
Hi, Barbie, it's me. Is it all right if I mean, can I come in and talk to you?
Sure, Hazel, come in.
I hope it's not too late or anything. I mean, if you're trying to get some sleep, I can go away again.
No, I wasn't trying to sleep. You want anything?
Just a talk.
Uh-huh.
I figured there's stuff you'd know that no one else here would. I mean, I'm not sure I can talk to Fox Club about it, and Wanda doesn't know from shit about that stuff. And Thessaly, I mean, she's so vanilla. And Scarlet's out of town, so that left you.
Come and sit.
Thanks.
Okay, so what do you want to talk about? Hazel? What's the matter?
What do you do if you think you're pregnant?
The Sandman, Act 2, Episode 13, A Game of You, Lullabies of Broadway.
Look, it's a very simple question. If you don't know the answer, just tell me you don't know and I'll go away again.
Hazel, you're gay.
Oh, great. Tell me something I don't know.
And you really think you might be pregnant?
Mm-hmm.
You want to tell me about it?
Well, about 6 weeks back, I wound up working really late, and one of the waiters gave me a lift home, and we were, like, both a bit drunk.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Fox had gone back to visit her folks, and he was sort of tired, and he asked if he could stay over. So I said, sure.
You said...
Well, he was tired. So what else was I going to do? And he promised nothing was going to happen. And then we were lying together, and his thing went all hard, and we sort of did it. Well, I figured there was no way I could get pregnant.
You mean he used a condom?
No, but we did it standing up.
Standing up?
Yeah. So it should have been fine. And it was all over really fast. I mean, it was kind of dumb, but he seemed so sad and sort of lonely. And anyway, he's gay, mostly. Well, my periods are usually pretty clockwork. I mean, me and Fox always come on within a day of each other, but this time it just didn't come.
Hazel, this waiter...
Raphael.
Right, Raphael. I mean, what did you think when he asked to stay over?
I thought he was real tired.
Did you enjoy it?
Not much. It hurt a bit.
I'll get you an ashtray. A saucer, anyway.
I can't be pregnant, can I?
Hazel, look. Was this your first time with a guy?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, there are kits you can buy to check if you're pregnant. Here.
Thanks. I don't have to kill a rabbit, do I?
What?
I thought someone said at school that the test was like, if this rabbit died or not, and I won't kill a rabbit. I'm a vegetarian.
I think that was in the olden days.
Have you ever been pregnant?
Once.
What happened?
I had an abortion. I was still at high school.
Does it hurt?
Not really. You get an anesthetic.
So, what do I do?
You get a home pregnancy test. You go see your doctor. Then you talk to Foxglove and figure out what you're going to do next. And listen, Hazel, when it comes to sex, well, don't ever believe anything a guy says. Guys think with their dicks.
Oh. I mean, I'd heard people say that, other women, lesbians, but I figured that was because they didn't like men. But you like men.
I suppose. I haven't slept with one for 2 years. Yeah, I like men. But I still wouldn't let one stay the night unless I was planning to sleep with him.
Can I have the frog mug? That was why I told Foxglove I was coming down here, to get our mug back.
Sure.
Thanks. I mean, for everything, for listening, for the advice.
No problem. Here you go. One frog.
Thanks.
Let me know how it goes, okay?
I will. Sorry. Listen, you look like you need some sleep.
Maybe I do. Good night. Silly girl. She's right. I am tired, but I'm scared. I don't even know what I'm scared of. Something in a dream I dreamed too long ago. I don't want to sleep. TV. I'll watch a little TV. Then maybe I'll go for a walk. Walk down to the waterfront and stare at Lady Liberty while the sun comes up. And get mugged and raped by a New York crazy before I get 5 blocks? Maybe not a great idea.
...of the New York Police Department maintains the giant dog shot dead on Fifth Avenue this morning must have escaped from a private collection.
Oh, God. Martin Ten Bones. Poor Martin Ten Bones.
Old-fashioned cotton wool, when you could be using new Wonder Wool. Now in cinnamon, fresh mint, and new salsa flavors.
Hurricane Lisa should blow itself out harmlessly over the North Atlantic. There's another front coming in.
Bobby's eyelids begin to droop.
She's such a beautiful baby, Bobby. We think we'll name her after you.
As she loses her grip on reality, she finds a miniature Hazel and Foxglove cheerfully sitting on top of the TV set, holding a rag doll.
And she'll be available in cinnamon, fresh mint, or new salsa flavor. Cecily's vanilla.
Then they are gone. Instead, there is now a skinny, pointy-eared, raggedy elf woman.
Hello, Barbie. My name's Nuala. I'm rather new at this. In fact, probably shouldn't be here at all. You have to be careful. They won't tell me very much. But there's something bad on the way.
Nodding off. Damn it. Mustn't fall asleep. Watch this stupid TV.
Our next guest is someone I've always wanted to see on a show. Humanitarian, wit, gourmet, and international traveler. Please welcome your ex-husband, Ken.
Huh?
Hi, Barbie. Long time no see. Ex-wives, huh? One minute they're frigid bitches who can't cook too good either. The next, they go off to New York and paint dumb things on their faces in a desperate attempt to seem interesting.
Is that true? Are you secretly a really boring person?
Hey, that's not the half of it. She's hanging around with degenerate weirdos and probably cracking up into the bargain.
This isn't working. I don't go for a walk.
And she succumbs to sleep. Barbie dreams, her hands and arms outstretched in front of her. She's pushing her way through grey gauze curtains. All she can see beyond the curtains is more curtains.
A world of curtains. I have been here before. I push my way through. Distantly feel them rend and tear. I feel as if I'm falling. But I am not falling. I am walking. This is good. I needed to go for a walk. I can stop worrying.
Barbie is wearing the outfit she always wears in dreams. A princess party dress. Tight-waisted and long with puff sleeves. Through the last few curtains, she begins to see shadowy figures and shapes on their far side.
Everything's just fine.
Barbie parts the last curtain. On its far side, on a snowy cliff edge in cold daylight, stands Wilkinson the Rat, fedora on his head, hands stuffed deep into the pockets of his trench coat. He looks thoroughly fed up with everything.
Oh, it's you. Well, you took your time, didn't you?
Midnight in the waking world. George waits patiently, leaning out of his open top-floor window in the old apartment block. His blank glasses reflect the quiet street. On the floor below, Hazel and Foxglove are in bed. Foxglove, her advances rebuffed, has cheerfully rolled over and is already snoring gently. Hazel is reading herself to sleep with Raymond Chandler's The Long Goodbye.
75, 76.
Each night before bed, in her tasteful little room, Thessaly brushes her hair 100 times in front of the mirror. She's wearing a bathrobe over a nightgown that goes up to her neck.
84.
She counts each brush stroke. Wanda surfaces to the low buzz of television voices in the next apartment.
Hmm? Oh, Barbie. Thin goddamn walls.
And then the warm darkness takes her. And Barbie? Having fallen asleep, sitting up in bed, her room illuminated by the flickering TV set, Barbie dreams. 1 o'clock. George looks out of his open window. He has been waiting patiently for this moment.
All asleep. They're all asleep.
He starts unbuttoning his shirt. To the others in the building, George is just the nerdy little guy with thick glasses who lives upstairs.
All asleep, they're all asleep. Everybody is all asleep.
His shirt is open. His thin torso is unremarkable. He picks up a box cutter knife.
Men's asleep, ladies asleep. Everybody's is all asleep.
He slices down his chest with the blade. The incision starts high at the top of the rib cage. He cuts hard and deep, but there is no blood.
Everybody but me's asleep.
He pushes his hands into the opening he has made and pulls outwards, ripping apart the flesh.
Everybody but us.
His exposed rib cage is a pristine white and completely empty of organs or tissue of any kind. Instead, the beaks of 4 birds poke out through the ribs. George looks down at them and smiles.
It's time to fly, my brothers, fly.
The birds flutter out of him, small black shapes that disappear into the shadows. George slumps to the floor, propped up against the wall like a dummy, his face blank, his shirt still open. His chest is completely normal. There is no wound. No ribs are visible. No life. He's like a shell, an empty thing. Wanda's room is sparsely furnished. Over her bed is a small photo of a man, a woman, and a child. It looks like a typical Midwestern farming family. Wanda dreams. In her dream, Wanda, wearing a cocktail dress, is in a department store. She is talking to a saleswoman.
Do you have any nice dresses?
We have lots of nice dresses. I will give you all the nice dresses you want.
Will I have to pay for them?
You will not have to pay for them.
A group of boys are standing behind Wanda, looking at her.
We were in school with you, Wanda.
We are so envious.
Because I do not bear a grudge, I will give all of you nice dresses as well.
Wanda sleeps on, unaware that one of the cuckoos from George's chest is perched on her shoulder. It stares down into her sleeping face. She does not wake. She is still in her department store dream. A woman approaches Wanda, lurching out of the shadows. Her hair is black, her face dead white, crystalline in structure. She wears a green dress and a crude medallion which reads, Weirdo Lila, number one. She's smiling.
Alvin, it am me, Weirdo Lila.
My name is Wanda.
You am? That am wonderful news. Us must tell Weirdo number one.
Come back. It is wonderful news.
The dream is turning into a nightmare. In the Weirdo universe, up is down and good is bad. Now Wanda is tumbling into one of the comics she used to read in all its madness.
Far out in space exists an amazing marvel of the cosmos, a cube-shaped world. It is the home planet of the Weirdos, a bizarre reflection of our world and everyone on it.
Sun is rising. Am time for bed.
Children, you must play with your food.
The Weirdo code is crazy but simple.
Us do opposite of earthly thing.
Us hate beauty. Us love ugliness.
It is a big crime to make anything perfect on Weirdo World.
Welcome to Weirdo World.
Dreaming of a childhood comic brought to life, Wanda is in a Weirdo World hospital with Weirdo orderlies, doctors and nurses lurching around like crystalline-faced zombies.
Oops, I dropped sterile tray.
Good work. Drop it again. Scalpel's still too clean.
Oh my God.
To her horror, Wanda is wearing a surgical gown, waiting in a prep room for some kind of procedure. She has no idea what it could be, but in Weirdo World, a hospital is probably not a place one comes to be made better.
No.
I'm fine.
Yes, that am terrible news.
Wait, what? Oh, no. I'm fine.
The doctor has flown in like Hyperman would if he was saving Lila Lake from a mugger. But this isn't Hyperman. Sure, he wears the cape and jumpsuit with the letter H on his chest, but a large medallion labels him as Weirdo number one.
Me am so happy.
I'm fine. Everything's perfect.
Us must operate immediately to make you imperfect.
You leave me alone, pal.
Hospitals frighten Wanda. People die in hospitals. Anesthetics frighten Wanda. People die under anesthetic. Doctors and surgery and scalpels and stitches frighten Wanda. God damn it. Taking aspirin frightens Wanda. And that's in the waking world.
I'm leaving.
Doctors, nurses!
No, please. I'm scared of surgery. Please.
Innocence am no excuse. Him will thank us one day. Okay. Make him ready for surgery.
I'm Wanda, you weirdo.
Wanda is tied to a hospital gurney, held down with leather straps. The trolley is being pushed by Weirdo orderlies.
For God's sake, you can't do this to me. I'm scared of surgery. I won't do it.
Listen, him be so happy us going to operate.
It am so good. Maybe him give us presents after.
I'm a woman. My name's Wanda.
Whoever you am, we make it better.
No, you morons. No.
Wanda cries in her sleep, mascara running down her cheeks. The bird is still perched on her shoulder,
no.
Peering intently at her face. Upstairs, in Hazel and Foxglove's mezzanine bedroom, Hazel has fallen asleep while reading. Hazel dreams.
I'm on a train journey across a country I don't know. I don't know if I speak the language or not. I don't know if I have a ticket.
Sorry, ma'am, that ticket is valid on the express. You'll have to leave the train. This way, please.
A ticket inspector tells me that there is something wrong with my ticket. I have to go with him.
Down these steps, into the cellar, please.
I didn't know that there were steps on trains.
There are cellars under all trains in this country. You have to go down.
Hazel descends into the train's cellar. At the bottom of the steps is a wooden box, like a pirate treasure chest, on the mud floor.
The present I won with my ticket is in the box. I go to open it.
Hazel is lifting a baby out of the box. The baby has a green-yellow tinge to it, with a large incision running from the base of its stomach all the way up to the side of its neck, which has been stitched back together. It's dead. The mouth is open. The eyes are staring blankly.
The baby smells of formaldehyde. Not unpleasantly. It is cold and clammy to the touch. The autopsy scar is sewn together with black silk thread. It has been dead exactly 70 years. It is perfectly preserved.
Hazel holds the baby in one arm, up against her chest and shoulder. Its head lolls. She walks to a door and opens it. Behind her is the cellar. Through the door is the room she shares with Foxglove. Foxglove is waiting for her, holding a sweet little blonde baby.
Fox is waiting for me, with her baby. I cannot remember her baby's name. I cannot remember how old it is. It's a boy, though. I remember that. My baby is cold, so we put them together in a crib to warm it up. We love our babies.
The two mothers stand beside the crib, looking down at the babies, one alive and cute, one dead and disgusting. The dead baby pushes itself up on one arm, leaning over the living one. Its eyes are wide and staring, a little zombie baby.
My baby begins to move. I am unspeakably proud of it. Now it smells of roses.
The dead baby's mouth opens improbably wide. It is filled with tiny, needle-sharp teeth.
No. I know what it's gonna do. I want to hide. I want to turn away. I want to stop looking. I can't.
No. 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 No!
I hear Fox keening for her son. I cannot move. And I know, once it's finished with Fox's child...
Stop it! Stop it! Stop it! Stop it!
Then it will come for us. Stop. Stop.
In their bed, in the real world, Hazel is asleep, her face screwed into an expression of agony and pain. A cuckoo is perched beside her, its wings spread, reveling in her nightmare. Beside her... Foxglove also sleeps. Foxglove has a cuckoo of her own. It sits on her shoulder. She rolls over, and the bird is gone, lost in the shadows.
Donna? Donna Kavanagh?
Foxglove sits up in bed, half asleep, still dreaming. She tries to focus on the figure standing at the foot of the bed in the dark and shadowy room.
Go away. Leave me alone.
Donna.
It's Foxglove now. That's what I'm called. I haven't been Donna for 2 years. More, maybe. Donna's somebody else. Donna's dead.
Donna.
Don't call me that! Who's talking, anyway? Who is that?
It's me. Judy.
Judy?
Judy Talbot hasn't changed since the morning Foxglove walked out on her for the last time. She still wears the leather biker jacket covered in badges, but her eyes are hidden in shadow.
You can't be Judy. You're dead.
Yeah. Dead as a dodo. It's a real shit, isn't it? And it's your fault, you know that.
Mine?
Sure it is. If you hadn't taken off, I wouldn't have been hanging around in that damn diner. And I'd still be able to taste and feel and dream.
Judy moves closer, hunkers down next to the bed.
So, you with anyone these days?
Yes.
Yeah? What's her name?
Hazel.
Is she as pretty as me? Is she? Does she make you feel like I made you feel?
No. No, she's not. But she's never hit me. Are you a ghost?
Something like that. A ghost or a dream? I don't know. Does it matter? Donna.
Yeah. Yes.
I just want us to be together again. For always. I want it to be just like it was. Hold on, I've got something in my eye.
Foxglove realizes Judy's eyes have not been hidden in shadow since she first appeared. They simply aren't there. She watches Judy absent-mindedly push her forefinger into an empty eye socket. Alone, apart from the sleeping Hazel, Foxglove sleeps on, her back against the wall, her mouth open, drooling. There is no one else in the room, save the two cuckoos perched on their shoulders. Foxglove's bird leans in to look at her face. It has a sharp beak. Thessaly sleeps on the bed in her tastefully decorated room. Her hairbrush and glasses are on a small night table. Her curtains are open and the room is part illuminated by the sodium yellow street lighting outside. A cuckoo flies through the wall above her head and settles on her shoulder. It leans in towards her sleeping face. Thessaly opens her eyes. She sees the bird looking down at her, its sharp beak an inch from her eye.
No, you don't.
In one swift move, she grabs the bird.
Nasty little thing, aren't you?
Sitting up in bed, Thessaly tightly holds the cuckoo in both hands. She looks at it, inspects it. Then she swings it upwards, over her head, slamming it into the wall. The bird, its life dashed out against the now blood and feather spattered wall, lies limp in her hand.
There.
Thessaly holds the little corpse out in front of her, frowning in concentration. The bird bursts into flame. A bright light, like burning magnesium, illuminates Thessaly's face from below, casting a shadow behind her, across the walls and ceiling.
Oof!
George, upstairs in his apartment, suddenly recoils and falls as if punched. He slowly gets up from the floor. A thin trickle of blood comes from the corner of his mouth. His expression is one of surprise. Thessaly puts on her glasses, gets out of bed, and puts on a bathrobe.
Need light.
Rummaging briefly in a drawer by the door to her apartment, she finds what she is looking for. Thessaly, wearing a pair of fluffy bunny slippers, climbs to the landing above, passing Hazel and Foxglove's room. She then takes the next flight up to George's apartment. It's a dingy, unpleasant stairwell, and the landing is dirty and damp.
Who is it? Hello? Yes?
Hello. It's George, isn't it? I mean, we've said hi, but we've never really been introduced.
Thessaly smiles nervously at George through the crack in the door. She has a nice smile.
I'm Thessaly, from downstairs.
Uh-huh.
Can I come in?
I guess.
George opens the door wide, and Thessaly enters his apartment. He sees a nice, sweet young woman in a nightdress, bathrobe, and bunny slippers. He does not see that, hidden behind her back, she holds a long, sharp, bone-handled knife. Barbie's dream, the land. Wilkinson the rat, Luz the dodo, and Pranado the monkey arranged gloomily around the last embers of a fire outside their cave.
So, do you remember us?
I don't know. Sort of.
Barbie sits in her princess party dress, the glittering porpentine hanging from her neck. Behind her, icy peaks stretch away to the horizon.
I mean, it's coming back to me, sort of,
but...
Yeah, well, I'm Wilkinson. The lady's Luz, and the gentleman in the hat is Pranado.
Thanks. I'm Barbie.
Princess Barbara, the heir to the land.
And his destined savior, Luz. You mustn't forget that.
Oh, yeah, right, great. You're going to save the land. You're going to defeat the Blackguard and the Cuckoo, all right. And you don't even know where you are. Well, at least Martin Tenbones knows what he's doing.
Oh.
And come to that, where is the great Airy Wuss's name? I thought he'd be coming back with you.
He's dead.
Oh. Huh. I see.
Then we are lost. The Cuckoo has won.
Don't say that, Luz.
No, she's right. What good am I going to be?
Shut up! For the grace of Murphy, she's the princess, isn't she? Well, isn't she? And she's got the Porpentine, and the hierogram is still unbroken.
But...
Martin Tenbones was my best friend. Even if this whole thing's going down in flames, I'm damned if we're all going to give up. Do you think he'd have wanted us to give up now? Well, do you?
I don't know. This place I had to get to, this... brightly shining sea. Is it a long way away?
Too far. We need to cross this mountain range to avoid the Black Guard. And between us and the sea is the Citadel of the Cuckoo. It's a very long way.
I see. Well then, we'd better get going.